Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Hour number two of the program. Sam McDowell, you hear him each week on the Central Bank pregame show as he sets the scene for us from wherever the Chiefs are playing. And he joins us for the 3 o'clock hour on a Monday, brought to you by our friends Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier, Corona Hard Seltzers, all kinds of great flavors, and, of course, 0 grams of carbs, zero sugars. If your New Year's resolution was to get in a little better shape, the Corona Premier, lower-carb beer, great tasting, but still lower carbs, and, of course, the Corona Hard Seltzers, get them wherever you get your Coronas today. Sam, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well.
Yeah?
Doing good.
Did you enjoy that game?
It was kind of exactly how you and I talked about how that game would play out, right?
Right.
Not the most exciting football game, but, you know, the Chiefs didn't get a bye, but it sort of felt like they got a bye.
Yeah, they did. And did you feel like the wake-up call came with the touchdown? That was really what they needed to kickstart. They were kind of sleepwalking like they really did against the Broncos. And that was the, oh, wait a minute, this is real. We got to do something here. And from that point on, it was, you know, get out of the way.
Yeah, it reminded me of 2019, that their playoff runs then, when things are at their absolute worst, seems to be when you get Patrick Mahomes at his absolute best. And it's a really good quality to have in a quarterback. Now, I'm sure we'll get into it, that you can't go five possessions without scoring against this team. They're getting ready to play and expect to win the game. But there is a pretty good quality in a quarterback when you guys have nothing going whatsoever and the quarterback just says, this can't happen. You know, this is not the way this game's going to go. And that's why I said it reminded me of 2019, because obviously they had moments in all three of those playoff games where it was the same sort of thing.
So far, my theory of, you know, they know they're going to be measured based upon what happens in the postseason, and that's when they're going to turn it on. It looks pretty good right now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see if they get smoked by Buffalo, and it'll be like, where's your theory now? In the toilet, you know, right where it belongs. But it certainly kind of looked that way because they played really well on both sides of the ball. I mean, they were even more dominant this time against the Steelers. You know, forget about the oh, by the ways at the end. But they were even more dominant this time against the Steelers. The defense was shutting them out almost the entire game when the game was something to be played for. And then the offense got back to playing at a 2018-2019 level.
The defense had given up 43 yards when the Chiefs had 35 points in that game. And since Patrick Mahomes had thrown five touchdowns to get those 35 points, you kind of forgot about how well the defense was playing. Now, part of that is Ben Roethlisberger played one of the absolute worst games I've seen against the Chiefs. I know what his final numbers were, that, you know, 29 of 44, 200 and some odd yards, a couple touchdowns. But the Chiefs didn't have to respect a pass over 10 yards throughout the entire game. To their credit, they adjusted their scheme based on the quarterback they were playing. They played more press coverage than any NFL team I think has ever played in the playoffs. Now, that data hasn't been tracked all that long, but, you know, they thought, you're going to throw short passes, we're going to take away the short passes.
By the way, at 35 points, right, and Big T calls and says, I don't like how they play. At 35 points, they'd given up 43 yards, and I take a call saying he doesn't like how the DBs play.
What about
him? The press coverage.
The press coverage is the scheme that got him in that position.
Your back is to the quarterback. You're not in a position to make an interception.
Okay. The scheme is what led that particular element of the scheme is why their defense was so successful, because the Steelers get rid of the ball more quickly than any team in football. All they want to do is throw short, short, short. What a lot of teams do with that is say, okay, we're not going to blitz you because we think you want to get rid of the ball quickly. We're going to have all of our guys in the backfield. You're not going to be able to throw these quick slants. The Chiefs still said, we're still going to blitz, but we're going to press. And so, therefore, your guys aren't going to be open in this 2.37 seconds that Big Ben likes to get rid of the football.
By the way, I have a text here. Blank, Big T, right, blank. You know, thought that was interesting reaction I got there off that one. Yeah, yeah. So I love the scheme, and I love the fact that you can't have the most expensive guy at every position, right? And
sure.
The Chiefs are spending money in some other spots. That means you got to save money somewhere. And they have gotten very good corner play.
More than any other position, they've gotten that. If you look at bang for your buck, they get more out of their corners than I think any other position on the roster. By the way, they also target specific types of players that fit that exact scheme we're talking about.
Right.
L'Jarius Sneed's physical at the line of scrimmage. Charvarius Ward is physical at the line of scrimmage. Now, I do think you go into this Bills game with Mike Hughes, it's different. You know, based Rashad Fenton's injury is going to be really interesting. His back tightened up pregame. Mm-hmm. We're going to see, you know, on Wednesday whether or not he's at practice, whether it's limited or whether he's not available at all. Because I did not think Mike Hughes had a great game. If there's one guy on that defense you could pick out, they toasted him a couple times on a touchdown. Dontay Johnson should have had a big gain on a slant and just dropped it against Mike Hughes. But having said that, scheme wise and the group, you know, it's a league. A lot of times you get what you pay for, or you get what you draft. They've gotten out of what they've drafted. And by the way, they're not using first and second round picks to get these guys.
The acquisition of their top three corners who have graded out just fine, according to Pro Football Focus, and the production that they've gotten is a guard they were going to cut.
They're going to cut him anyway, right?
Parker Anger. And he was a seventh rounder. We're talking about Charvarius Ward. It's a fourth rounder for L'Jarius Sneed and a sixth rounder for Rashad Fenton. And then what did they give up for Mike Hughes and DeAndre Baker? DeAndre Baker was just signed off the street.
Right.
Was Hughes signed or was there a trade?
They swapped a seventh and sixth round pick for him.
So they basically just
moved back around.
Moved back.
Yeah.
And what is going to end up being about half a round.
Right, right.
Because their pick in the sixth is going to end up being bottom of the sixth, and the Vikings pick is going to be middle of the seventh.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you were told going into whatever roster building system you want to get into that as a GM, this is what you're allowed to spend on your cornerbacks and list off what you just listed off. There's no way you could possibly expect the production they've gotten out of. And we should give credit to the defensive coordinator too.
Yes. And the DB coach. And
absolutely.
The personnel department. Yeah. They all have done a magnificent job of being able to fit quality corner play in while spending the money elsewhere.
Yeah. And, you and I have talked a lot about what do you do with Charvarius Ward in the offseason for that reason. You know, I think Charvarius Ward's a good cornerback. Do other teams think that he's a product of this system? Do the Chiefs think that he's a product of this system?
Jeff Chinnea thinks he's a product of the system.
Well, I think that the Chiefs have...
Jeff's like, he's you know, they're going to watch him walk just like they watch Bashaud Breeland walk. And if they can go find another one...
And I think that's their evidence, is they could say, look at what we've gotten out of this position despite using all the capital that we just mentioned. Why can't we just go get somebody else in that element too? But it's the Ward situations, of course, is going to all come down to price, what other teams are willing to pay him. But that has to factor into the decision.
I don't know that you want to be replacing Tyrann Mathieu and Charvarius Ward.
I agree.
Right? So I think that's one of them. If they get a deal done with Mathieu, I think Ward's gone. If they don't get a deal done with Mathieu, I think they need to sign Charvarius Ward. But we're in the midst of a potential run to a championship here, and we're worrying about next year. But I can tell you that, and it's why we did it a couple of weeks ago, Brett Veach and his staff have already broken down the free agents.
Oh, absolutely.
That's already done. They do that in the month of December. So they know what their guys are, what their plan is, what their cost points are on guys, and they know what's out there and who they're going to target. They're ready to flip that switch and go right now. Because now the work is really hot and heavy on draft.
Yeah.
And so the free agent stuff has to be put together. It was done in the final weeks of you know, the season and is ready to go. And they'll have their plan on what it is. And I know they've done a remarkable job, but I just think at some point, like, hey, we'll just, you know, pick one off the corner tree in the fifth round. Like, at some point, that gets you. And I think where we're also looking at is they have other needs. Right? Like, they're going to spend a lot of money on Orlando Brown, and I think he now warrants it, you know, even though he got beat a couple of times. Got beat bad one time where he just whiffed. He's not infallible, but he's better than what's out there.
Absolutely.
And he's a hell of a lot better than what they could have drafted. So that's been a good move. They need to pay him. He's good for the chemistry of the team. He gives them someone to continually put up on the podium to answer questions with us because they have lots of guys who they don't want to put up there. So that gives him value.
One more thing, because I know you'll continue on this point, but I also think that there's a reasonable expectation that Brown's going to improve because it's his first year at left tackle, first year playing in a pass-heavy system.
That's fair. I think that's fair. I think the things that that cost him are a lack of agility, and I don't know that that's
to the outside.
Yeah, yeah. But to your point, yes, I think he'll get smarter, and he's a bright guy. That part's there.
For sure.
But you know, they need another wideout.
Absolutely.
Byron Pringle played. You know, I'm sure K-State fans are like, what the hell are you talking about? Pringle just had two touchdowns. I still think they need another wideout, and I think when we heard Andy Reid say today, you know, those guys playing well helps Tyreek Hill. Because when other guys are a threat, it opens things up for Tyreek Hill. And I think we saw that later in the game. When other they had to kind of come out of their anybody but Tyreek approach because Pringle was beating them, right? Yeah. DeMarcus Robinson had a key catch. You know, they were having other guys do it. But I still think another truly top-shelf wide receiver and subtract whichever one of the bottom-end guys you want, and this looks like a better team to me.
I think I'd go into the offseason thinking that, you know, and I haven't studied the draft enough to know the depth of this wide receiver class, but I think I'd either use a high capital pick on a wide receiver. I will say wide receivers are something that you can get. You know, you don't have to be picking at the top half of the first round to get a wide receiver. You can get a good wide receiver in the second round too. But they've got to spend there in one way or another. It's, you know, Travis Kelce's not getting younger. Can you expect him to...
But he doesn't appear to be getting older.
He doesn't.
Let's at least make that point.
But can you expect him to... How much longer can you expect his peak? Yeah, maybe.
I think two more years, and then he's still a productive player. But 34 seems to be kind of where the cliff.
Yeah, because
with tight ends. So.
Your offense is relying on Travis Kelce to be a lot more than productive. I mean, it's relying on him to be a go-to guy in your offense.
And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, his birthday was like 100 days. I think we looked at a week or so ago, and he was 32 in 100 days. I mean, if only I had a device with the answer to everything in front of me where I could lean forward.
This is what it comes down to in the offseason is whether or not – how many – it's the days element of the birthday that is
– Well, I mean, the fact that there's a difference between, you know, the 32-year-old season and the, you know, 33-year-old season can be just a day apart. You know that.
I know that. But
he is right now 32 and 104 days. Thank you for that call. So he will enter next year at 32, turn 33. So two, maybe three more years of top shelf productivity. But yes, I would love to see them get another tight end. You know that, maybe Noah Gray's it. Maybe he serves an apprenticeship year and he gets better. Haven't seen it so far, but they were certainly giddy about him in training camp. We haven't seen the productivity, but yeah, listen. You know you're gonna have to pay Orlando Brown. Back to the point, you have to pay Orlando Brown. You have to pay Tyreek Hill, and that price tag's going up. And that's not this year, but it's the year after. And I think you'd rather do it now.
For sure.
And get some cost certainty there and bring the overall number down. But, you know, they've got a lot. You know, Derek Nottie's a free agent. There's a lot of – and, whoa, they can live without Derek Nottie. All right. I mean, they stop the run sometimes.
Yeah.
And he's one of their best at that.
But Jaron Reed is too. So if you're going to – you know, you got to get one of those guys back.
Yeah. So those are decisions they have to make at the end of the year. One thing I will say to kind of tie that back in is I love the player, and I loved him at LSU. And I said, you know, it's my favorite player for the Chiefs at a pick I don't want to see him taking him at. And taking, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round, when, by the way, T. Higgins and Michael Pittman were the next two picks behind him, the first two picks of the second round, were those two guys who have both been very productive receivers. You know, when you see Jerick McKinnon, I mean, they literally can seemingly grab anybody. I mean, when Spencer Ware had like a 90-yard rushing and 60-yard receiving day, Spencer Ware was a sixth-round pick on the practice squad of the Seahawks who they cut. And Andy Reid made him the best fantasy player of the weekend.
Yeah.
Literally, I don't think that they can draft a running back ever again.
Look, Damian Williams has, you know, a route that, you know, three or four teams didn't want him either. I do think that Jerick McKinnon's game, and not that, you know, you should base everything on one game, but it shows you that the improvement of this offensive line, there's running backs that can run behind this offensive line, and I don't think that Clyde Edwards-Helaire has done enough to separate himself from the rest of the group that warrants spending a first-round pick on him. I don't think it warrants spending a second- or third-round pick on him. But he's been injured.
What running back would you say? I mean, Jonathan Taylor's the one that should have taken Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor's been better. That's fine. But how much better would Jonathan Taylor be than what Jerick McKinnon just did? For nothing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're factoring what you have to spend to get him, I still wouldn't spend a first round pick if I'm in Kansas City's position to get Jonathan Taylor.
I mean, like I can. Jerick McKinnon has been, and this is one where fantasy nerds know what they're talking about. You know, when we're talking about the skill position players, everybody's taking a shot at Jerick McKinnon with the Vikings, with the Niners. He's been picked up because he had a big game with the Vikings. He had a big game with the Niners. You've seen the guy flash potentially. You don't have to be a pro player personnel director in the NFL to know Jerick McKinnon's got something. And the problem is he can't stay healthy.
Right.
But if you can put together four guys that all have those skills, my knock or my question, it's not a knock, is I'm surprised Reed doesn't do a little bit more of the Patriots. We got a package for this guy. We got a package for that guy. He kind of just puts one guy in, and you better be able to do all his stuff. There's no doubt he tweaks it to who's in there. You know, when Darrell Williams is in there, he's a more physical player than certainly Jerick McKinnon or Clyde Edwards-Helaire, just because of the size and the weight. You know, it's simple physics, force, right? He's going to bring more of a punch to the equation. So I know he tweaks it, but, you know, to the When the Chiefs lost in 18, you had White catching the ball all over the place. You had who's the Nebraska guy, the White Nebraska back that's now with what Jacksonville was
Rex Burkhead.
Yeah, Rex Burkhead stuffing it down your throat. Like they had something for everybody on that day. And Reed just doesn't operate that way. He seems to have a guy. It was Jerick McKinnon's day.
Yeah.
Everything was running through Jerick McKinnon. Part of that was necessity. No Edwards-Helaire. Toe problem still for Darrell Williams. And, you know, but aren't you a little surprised he doesn't kind of have, like, there wasn't a Derek Gore package and a, you know, a McKinnon package and something out there, you know, as opposed to just because if you run McKinnon into the ground, like I said, a history of injuries, now you're down to Derek Gore, who I like, but you're literally just down to Derek Gore.
Right.
Because Darrell Williams clearly wasn't healthy.
The most surprising playing time this season based on packages that they rolled out in training camp was the lack of playing time from Jerick McKinnon. The way they used him in training camp, and, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about how well he ran the ball because they're not tackling in full in training camp. So running backs are as hard to judge as any position in camp. I'm talking about the personnel packages he was in with in camp. I mean, he played a lot with Patrick Mahomes in the ones. And a lot on passing downs. And I anticipated him being a regular third down back. I think he showed that he's best in space. He showed that against the Broncos last week. He showed that yesterday. I mean, they know that. They used more screens yesterday than they have all season. And that's because of the personnel that they were forced to play, basically. You know, Darrell Williams, I think they wanted him to play more. And in pregame, they tried to have him test out his toe, and he felt like he couldn't get the same burst that he usually gets, and so he didn't play as much. And so Jerick McKinnon played even more, and they knew they were going to have to use McKinnon a lot yesterday, but to the degree which they used him, you know, I think it did change their play calling, even if it doesn't alter who's in on what package. You know, everybody's got to know every piece of the offense, but you can still call certain pieces of the offense based on the guys you have. But I'm surprised that a guy in year 8 that's gone through two knee surgeries, two on the same knee, by the way, had the type of burst that he still has left, and I'm more surprised that if he does have that type of burst, we haven't seen him in the game more.
A quarterback threw for 404 yards and 5 touchdowns at 76% completion percentage. It's the second highest completion percentage of a Chiefs quarterback in the postseason. It's the fourth game that he's had in postseason and regular season that he's had 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. No other quarterback has more than 3. And those three that have that are Peyton Manning, Joe Montana, and Dan Marino. Right? Was it Marino, Curtis? Who's the third one? Okay, Peyton Manning, Joe Montana.
Yeah, it was Marino. And I sent you some numbers on that, by the way. I just texted you some numbers on that you were looking for.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So here it is. By the way, so he's career start when they logged their third game with 400. So he has 4 now, and he did it in his 72nd start. Right? And the numbers on that. Did you see this? This is a SportsCenter one.
No, I didn't.
I'm a nerd, and I take pictures of SportsCenter stats, and I send them to Curtis and Jed, and so they have to deal with all these.
Tell me that you pause the TV and take it on the TV.
I try to get it.
By the way, I love that stuff, by the way.
I do. I try to get a picture of it while it's live, and then, damn, and I got to rewind and go back. Thank God for the DVR. Mahomes has played 72 games. In his 72nd game, he got his fourth 405. Manning played 292 career games, Marino 258, and Montana 187, and they all had 3. Their third, Mahomes got his third in 64th game. Montana, 146th. Marino, 165. And Peyton Manning is 256th. I mean, those are stat pigs.
Yeah.
That he's smoking. Yeah. And by the way, it's an, oh, by the way, it's like I had to force myself to throw it out there to you because we're taking phone calls about people pissing and moaning about how their corners are playing press coverage. And nobody wants to be like, yeah, I just saw a guy go for 405 from the quarterback position when, you know, we saw some good quarterback play from Alex Smith and Trent Green, but otherwise, for the most part, a barren wasteland. A couple minutes here and there from Rich Gannon. Elvis Gerbach had a day or two here or there. And yet now we're already to the point like, oh, yawn, 405. Like, he had one of the most spectacular games in the history of postseason football, and no one's even talking about it in this town.
And did it in about 30 minutes.
And I also,
he did it literally. Yeah. He did it in what, the five touchdowns came in, what 9 minutes?
11 minutes and 30 seconds of game time.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that because we heard back in 2019, and I don't mean to continue to go back to the year they won the Super Bowl, but I do think this is relevant. When things weren't going well in that Houston game that they had, that Mahomes gave a speech on the sideline, and the gist of that speech was, hey, guys, let's go do something special. You know, let's give him something to talk about. So I asked him, I was like, you know, what sort of speech came up when things
Reba
weren't going
McEntire
well?
Reba McEntire or something?
I don't think he was referencing Reba McIntyre there.
Isn't that a country song?
Okay, that's Bonnie Raitt.
If it's any any sort of country song, I've never heard of it. Probably.
Yeah. Okay.
But I asked him about some sort of speech or something yesterday, and he was like, you know, not really. No, everybody was kind of saying stuff, but there was no sort of speech. And I think at some point on that sideline, it's just turned into they understand. They've got that guy on their sideline, and it has just, to your point, just become the expectation eventually this tidal wave is going to take over, especially against a defense that isn't great.
Yeah, yeah. Greatness is happening. Let's do take a moment to smell the roses in Kansas City. Take a moment to appreciate what this man did, and don't just take it for granted because it was a spectacle.
This city particular should not take that for granted.
No. We'll take a break. Sam Mellinger's with us, brought to you by our friends at Corona. Get the Corona Premier. Less carbs. Get the Corona Hard Seltzers. Less carbs, less sugar if you're looking to get that New Year's resolution going and still have some great flavor, a great adult beverage. It's the Corona Premier and the Corona Hard Seltzers. We'll take a break. More with Sam McDowell next here on the program.
All right, the good sense, end of the hour answer. Cowboys now have the longest streak of playoff appearances without reaching the conference championship game 11 straight. Who has the next longest streak?
Losers! Get the Chiefs off there. Finally, the Chiefs aren't the king of that one.
Yep, they were tied at 10. I asked who the next longest streak was. It was the Chiefs, 10 straight from 1994 to 2017. They failed in 94, 95, 97, 03, 06, 10, 13, 15, 16, 17.
Yeah.
And then Patrick came along.
Good sense, what we're playing for. I think some good sense is going to be had at this house. We've got people going in different directions. You know what we like to do? Put in the app, goodsensesubs.com. You can pick what time you want to pick it up. So, like right now, you can put your order in. If you want to pick it up at 6, 6:10, 6:20, you can get it. Slicing the meats and cheeses fresh right in front of you. 30% more meat. And the app, use the app. That's the easiest way to order and get 10% back when you're part of the loyalty club. Love my Good Sense loyalty club. Go to goodsensesubs.com to put your order in right now, goodsensesubs.com. And don't forget to download the app. Sam McDowell is with us talking some Chiefs football. I want to talk about Eric Bieniemy, despite the ridiculousness of the call that Eric Bieniemy somehow not qualified because Andy Reid calls the plays. And I love it. Well, what does he do? What does any coach do, right? What coach do you know what they do during the week?
Right?
They do a lot of film breakdown. There's a lot of different things. There's no doubt. I think Eric Bieniemy's as a candidate, his you know, star doesn't burn quite as bright when Doug Peterson gets fired in Philadelphia, although he did win a championship, and Matt Nagy gets fired in Chicago. There's no doubt that just being at Andy Reid's right hand does not make you a coach that can't fail. That's a fact, right? So I think he's suffered from that a little bit. But he certainly is qualified or more than most coaches out there. And I think he's going to get the job. I don't think Andy Reid looks at us and goes, I think he gets a job this time and is wrong. I think Andy Reid already knows it's a done deal. I'm hearing Minnesota. right? Like, do you think Eric Bieniemy is going to get the job?
I think Eric Bieniemy is going to get hired this offseason. I actually was already hearing that there was some momentum towards that happening, but nothing is, you know, instills more confidence than Andy Reid saying what he said on that yes. Zoom call last week.
I don't think Andy. I don't think Andy Reid likes being wrong about anything, anything ever.
He also,
he's a super competitive guy, and I don't think he'd make that statement unless he already knew this was done.
He volunteered it. It was not a the question was not, do you think he gets hired this offseason?
Right.
It was just about Eric Bieniemy's candidacy as a coaching candidate. And he
wasn't it? I think I asked him about distractions.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And is it a distraction for Eric Bieniemy, and how do you handle that distraction? And he took that question and then did a sales job for Eric Bieniemy and didn't really answer my question. Yeah. Just kind of said no, and then Eric Bieniemy's totally ready, blah, 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 blah. And I think he gets a job this time.
Yeah. By the way, the distractions thing's another thing. Like, the NFL's got to figure out a way to change the timing of all this. There is no reason that a coach should be preparing for a divisional round and also interviewing with another team in the same week. And I haven't.
How do you fix it? What's your solution?
I think that the timing of it could be different. So I think maybe you can interview guys late in the season. You know, you can only do, they added that for what, 2 weeks this year. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you know, I realize everybody wants to get a jump on things, but I think the main reason everybody wants to get a jump on things is they don't want to miss out on the guy they want.
Right.
And so once one domino falls, they all start to fall. And I think if you made everybody wait and not just the teams that are out of the playoffs are getting their guys interviewed, it suddenly becomes an advantage to be out of the playoffs because now you can be singularly focused. Because I have heard some of the feedback on Eric Bieniemy's interviews are, you know, his presentation. And I think he has an excuse, partly, for that presentation, which is he's the last 3 years been playing in the playoffs. Every single time he's interviewed, he's had a game to prepare for. He's never had the opportunity to clear his mind and say, I want this job, and I'm going to put all of my energy this week, this day, into getting this job. And so I think the NFL needs to alter that because it punishes the people who have been successful franchises.
I think everybody should probably have to wait till what, the week before the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think the dead week before the Super Bowl is the great week to, you know, that's when you interview. And again, it has to be everybody.
But they're not going to wait. They're going to be reaching out in advance, having phone calls. Like, what are you going to do, tap everybody's phone?
Yeah, I mean, well,
so I think there's a little bit of
happens in free agency too. But in free agency, it's the same mechanism, right? They don't just suddenly start signing guys the 5 minutes after the new year starts. And we just reached out to him 4 minutes ago, and he happens to want to come here for mm-hmm. the number we were thinking. But that still does give other teams the opportunity within that window to come in and say, no, we're going to offer you this.
And does Mike Kafka get a job?
Well, I think
I think Bieniemy's got to go because Kafka's going to be the offensive coordinator, and I think Matt Nagy's going to be the quarterback coach.
Well, Kafka,
unless Eric Bieniemy hires Matt Nagy as his offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I do think that's going to be an interesting element wherever and whenever Eric Bieniemy gets a job is, you know, I think his biggest strength that we hear constantly is his leadership and management skills of people, and. He's not called the plays. There's been tons of coaches who have not called the plays who later call the plays when they're head coaches. But I do think it would be wise for Eric Bieniemy to bring in an offensive coordinator that has more responsibility than he has here. And particularly defensive coordinator, obviously, as well. And, you know, he's going to get a pick of staff whenever he does get a job. But I think that's going to be an important element for him is that he doesn't take on too much because he's going to have a lot new on his plate, and I don't think calling plays and all that should be coupled together.
I think, you know, he'd be wise to grab a Nagy and or Peterson.
Yeah,
you know, to be his offensive coordinator and to be right there with him.
Peterson's probably a bit rich because he's like his next job, I think, is going to be a head coach again.
I think so too, but I don't think I always like to look at the betting odds. And he's not the betting favorite to get any job.
You're right. Yeah.
And so if you don't like Mike Billick. You know, won a championship with the Ravens. Won a championship with the Ravens. And he got let go, and he'd run its course. You're like, well, somebody's got to take a shot at this guy. And they didn't 1 year, and then they didn't another, and they didn't another. Then you've been out of it for so long, you're almost like, well, out of sight, out of mind.
Steve Spagnuolo feared that. And, you know, his wife begged him to take that year off. And he felt like, looking back, it was particularly educational for him to look at just the entire league, the trends throughout the entire league. But he said, I couldn't do it more than a year because I feared I'd get lost in the mix if I did.
Well, I know guys on the personnel side that, you know, they usually get fired right after the draft, and no one's hiring until the next draft. And so you're out a year. And then if you don't get hired that time, you're out another year. Like, this, it isn't like normal people's jobs where they, well, we might hire in March, we might hire somebody in. No, you start in the process, and they want your reports and your information on their team, and then they fire you right when they're done with your stuff. And then there's no jobs open. I mean, it is a cutthroat business. It sucks. And it's why I don't take lightly when GMs get fired, because I know scouts are now fired. And they're not getting a job, in all likelihood, for 1 year till the next cycle comes around. So it's a brutal business from that standpoint. But I think Peterson better be in the league, or, you know, it was a bumpy, bumpy end.
It was.
At Philadelphia. So I think you need to get back and be, I know there's kind of, it's a balancing act. Like, well, I don't want to sign on to a bad team and, you know, have a bad quarterback and a bad head coach where, you know, he's overruling me and now I look like an idiot versus like being out too long. So I think Bienemy would be wise to have somebody who knows the scheme and system rolling right with him. And then maybe even give him the play calling duties.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and just manage the game and do all the head coaching stuff. And if after they get a job again 2 years from now, you want to take on the play calling duties now that you've had your feet wet for a couple of years, I'd be all for that. I mean, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, you know, a lot of what Andy Reid does that gets talked about the most is the way he designs plays, his offensive scheme and all that. That's not the stuff the players talk about when they talk about why they think Andy Reid's a good coach. It is his leadership skills. And how many times do we hear about the Chiefs locker room culture? The head coach sets that culture. And I still think that that's going to be Eric Bieniemy's strong suit wherever he goes. And that the other stuff is going to be really appealing to him. You know, designing the whole offense and setting the scheme and calling the plays. But I think he could get some help there. And, you know, if he focus on your strengths, especially in year one, like I said, when you don't want to just have all this newness to your job. I think if, first of all, and let's go back to the original point, because I didn't really touch on that. He's never going to be more qualified than he is now. I mean, he's gone to two straight Super Bowls, won one, coached for a guy that a lot of people consider top two in the NFL. Like, what more? But that also does not mean that any team is obligated to hire Eric Bieniemy. He still has to crush the interview. And like I said, from the feedback I hear, that I think that's where what the hang-up has been. And we talk to him every week. And I like the guy personally a lot. But I don't think his answers are vague. And if he's giving a lot of vagueness in interview answers, I could see where a GM would be turned off by that.
Oh, I can too. I can too. Let's take a break. We'll talk about the Buffalo Bills. Chiefs v. Bills. Chiefs 2-point favorites. Does Sam McDowell like the Bills or the Chiefs in that? We're talking to the Kansas City star, Sam McDowell. We'll take a break. Come back. Sam, brought to you by our friends at Corona. Corona Premier, less carbs. Corona Hard Seltzer, zero carbs, zero sugars. Get it right now wherever you buy your beer. It's the Corona Premier, Corona Hard Seltzer. All right, welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're talking to Sam McDowell, brought to you by Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier, and Corona Hard Seltzer. Sam, the Bills, what do you think? First of all, is the spread correct? KC minus two?
Yeah, I thought it would be 2.5 was what I guessed.
I think, did it open at 2.5 and it's been bet down to two?
Yeah, it was 2.5 or three based on the website.
So you think that's right?
Yeah.
And you think who wins?
It's only Monday. I'm going to reserve my right for the pregame for the next until I get on your pregame.
Yeah, what's
show.
Your but feel right now as you look at it?
I think Buffalo's a better team right now. So, you know, does the home field play that much of an advantage? I don't think so. But I honestly think these are the two best teams left in the NFL.
I do too. I think this is truly the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that they will win it because upsets can happen, right. But I think this is the two best teams are going at it. And I will agree Buffalo's a better team, but I think the better quarterback is Patrick Mahomes.
That tends to matter this time of year.
And I think that can trump the team. I mean, I do think this is somewhat a referendum on defense. You know, I mean, I said this, you know, we talked about it on our Red, Gold, and Bold podcast early in the year. And to Jeff Chedia, who's obviously a defensive back in his day and talks about the defense, and I think he was proven right. You can't have no defense, right? Because that's how they got off to a 3-4 start. They were playing terrible on defense. Now they're a top 10 points allowed defense. So whatever they do, they're going to be an enigma because they're 26th in yards and 8th in points allowed, which is definitely how you'd rather it be. Right? You don't want to be 8th in yards and 26th in points allowed. So they're maximizing what they have. And Andy Reid's teams always do it until you get to where you're 3-4. Then it's virtually the same. But, you know, which I think speaks to Andy Reid's game management skills of maximizing the points that they do allow and knowing what yards they can give up. And I think Steve Spagnuolo deserves a lot of credit for that as well. But this is somewhat of a referendum. If the number one defense who has their own franchise quarterback making – you know, $250 million can't win because the other guy's the better quarterback, then stop with the defense. Yeah. Like, you know, it's all about the quarterback.
This is all, like, the Bills have been building everything for the last 3 years for this game, you know, to beat this team. And, you know, the Bills only allow 163 yards through the air. And, you know, it kind of.
Tre'Davious White is out, though.
He is out. But that's
a big one.
But they have.
Plenty. By the way, do you know what the link to Tre'Davious White is?
Yeah, perhaps to Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, he was pick 27.
They got a pretty good player out of that draft.
And then still got Josh Allen the next year. Yeah. So they did all right.
I still would take 15.
I would too.
But they've still played well in the secondary. What's really bizarre about the Bills this season is Josh Allen hasn't had a great year. When you look back at the arc of his season, when he came into Kansas City last time, he was on fire. And really on fire in Kansas City. What did he complete? 15 passes for over 300 yards. But the last 10 games of the season, Josh Allen threw 12 interceptions and his passer rating was 84. 10 games. That's not a small sample size. Now, he played lights out against the Patriots, but I talk about this a lot, that people are very reactionary based on what you just saw last weekend. Mm-hmm. The last 10 games as a whole, he's not been – you know, the Josh Allen that we saw last year in the MVP conversation. So I wonder what Josh Allen we're going to see. I also think that the Chiefs have to worry about his legs as much as his arm. But overall, I still think the Bills are the toughest team the Chiefs have played in the last 3 years trying to get to the Super Bowl.
Last year, he had a QBR of 76.6. This year, 60.7.
And like I said, he started out. You know, those first 7 games were considerably better than the last 10.
By comparison, Patrick Mahomes last year had a QBR of 78.1. This year, 62.7. Who's going to have the day, right? Neither one of them have had as good a season this year. Allen finished with 36 touchdowns, 15 INTs, 4,400 yards. Mahomes, 4,800 yards, 37 touchdowns, 13 INTs.
But I do think, you know, that the season as a whole is completely relevant. The trend of the two quarterbacks has been different over the back half of the season. You know, Mahomes for 5 straight games to finish off the season. This is before we saw yesterday's performance. So you throw in yesterday, it's 6 straight games over 100 quarter passer rating. Josh Allen has just been, before last weekend, trending in the opposite direction.
Yeah, you know, we should point out the 308-5-0 against the Bill Belichick defense is a pretty strong indicator. Before that, 239-2-0 and beating the Jets, a game that they were stuck in neutral for 3 quarters.
They haven't played a strong schedule this year.
Against Atlanta, 11 of 26 for 120, no touches, 3 picks. Before that, though, 314-3-0, 210-3-1, 2-1. I hear you on the pass rating. By the way, a 17 passer rating against Atlanta. And if you want to know how bad the Atlanta Falcons suck, the Bills won 29-15 with that horrible performance. I think the Chiefs are a lot better, but I think the Bills are better too because I think Devin Singletary, Brian Daboll dislodged his head. And I think he's a fine coach, and I think he's going to get the Dolphins job, and I think he deserves the Dolphins job. And I like the guy back – you know, previous to Andy Reid, you could actually talk to assistant coaches. I got to talk to him one-on-one even. I mean, I'm talking not just the one little, here's 6 minutes, you know, for everybody to get one question in. And I really enjoyed it. I think he's a smart guy, and I think he gets it. And, you know, we'll see. You don't know if you're going to be a good head coach till you get in that spot. But, you know, getting Devin Singletary involved was a no-duh moment. Eric Eagers talked about how the Bills are actually better running the ball if you count their RPOs, that, you know, the team is saying, okay, throw it, making the decision for you, and you add in what he throws out of the RPOs. He said they're a better running team than you think, you know, if you factor in those option plays as part of the equation and compare them into everybody else's runs and RPOs, the Bills will climb the charts on where they are. But they're flat out running it with Devin Singletary. And I think there's something to be said for it's okay for Josh Allen to hand off and just be able to watch a play. You know, like I think it's okay for Patrick Mahomes to not have to scramble around on every play to make something happen. You know, if you're having a day and the rush is on you, you know, we all agree the modern analytics say that throwing's better than running. But making your quarterback 60 times the epicenter of every play and making him be on red alert constantly for every play is a little tough. It's okay to give him a mental break, if nothing else, to just hand off to Singletary. And then if the guy can get 4 or 5 or spring one for 10, 12, 15 yards, you got a productive play and your quarterback had a little downtime. I mean, I do think that's something that coordinators forget. I think Daboll definitely forgot it. He's not forgetting it anymore.
Well, I think what gets you beat is sort of the stark reminder of what needs to change. I mean, we saw what changed with the Chiefs when they got beat last postseason. The Bills in the postseason last year had no running, no even threat of the running game.
Except Josh Allen,
yeah. So I think they had to change if they felt like the end goal is not to get to the AFC Championships, it's to get to the Super Bowl and win it.
And at this point, you're leaning to the Bills.
Slightly, yeah. I think it's a field goal game type of game. I think it's going to be close all game. I don't think any team's going to get out to a massive lead. I don't think any team's going to finish with a massive margin. So, but as of Monday,
if it's a field goal game, don't you favor Mahomes?
I think obviously Mahomes is the best player on the field. He's the best player on the field every time he's on the field. But the Bills' defense, I think, is really good. They scheme it really well, and I think that they've got better personnel to fit the scheme that Mahomes has been seeing all season.
Interesting.
You can beat him up front. You know,
yeah.
That's where you got to get him. You got to get the Bills up front.
I think if it's a close game, the Chiefs win, though. I think the Bills got to find a way to make it not close. Sam, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, friend.